The Renaissance Festival scene. Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is Dave Myers. He wanted to talk to us about strength and faith and whether or not it takes more strength to be faithful in God.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Nick Glover.
Hi.
And today we have a very special guest. He's very special because he paid for himself to be on our podcast.
What?
He won it.
Yeah, he won it as the high bid in the silent auction at Die Laughing. So thank you for supporting Fearless Comedy Productions.
You're welcome.
Dave Myers, welcome to our podcast.
Yay, welcome, Dave. Hi.
So,
I've never lost an auction yet.
Well, if you're willing to spend enough, you will never will.
That's it.
that's just the way auctions work. But thank you again for doing that. And so you are on our podcast, and that means you get to choose the subject. And the subject that Dave would like to talk about is faith and strength.
Yes.
So why don't we give a little context to the conversation?
So, I don't even know how to explain this. So, I have a friend of mine who has found God a number of years ago and has really given all of herself over to God. There's almost nothing left of her original self. And it really kind of struck me that she was a really weak person for giving all of herself over to God. And over the course of the years, it's really kind of come to me that it really takes a lot of strength to have faith. Hmm. Especially in this world today when there's so many things to sort of go against God and people aren't believing in God. And to be able to continue to have strength and say, I believe, it really does take a lot of strength. So.
I'm trying to think of a counter-argument that isn't as immediately sharp of a response as,
right.
I'd want to innately. And so... do you mean it takes strength to have faith in the face of evidence or in the face of things that just whittle away at a person and their faith just in everyday life?
I think all of that.
Okay.
You know, for the people that believe, and I am agnostic, I wrote it down because I knew I was going to fit. I am a theist, deist, agnostic, and part believer. So.
Okay. You're not sure, but you think there's something.
Yes, yep. Exactly. Yep. That's a good way to put it, exactly.
Sure.
So, you know, for people who are firm believers, who are really entrenched in faith, for
and
them
specific
to...
specific dogma, too, yeah.
Yeah, you know, to be able to stand up and, you know, pray at dinner in a crowded lunchroom in front of people and be able to say, I'm okay with that. I don't care if anybody sees me praying, you know, that kind of thing.
I see Muslims praying at the mall.
Yeah.
Like, just out, like, when I used to work at the mall, when it would be, like, around 5 o'clock or so, whatever the time was for that particular day to face Mecca, there would be several employees and just people who we have a lot of the Muslim community at Eden Prairie. Just you know, would just drop to the ground and just and do their praying. And I can see what you're saying with that. That does take some strength of character for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. My question was actually going to be about how you defined yourself. So
Great.
So you answered that question before I asked it because I think you know that is a contextual piece of it.
My parents were Catholic. We went to church on Sundays. Nobody ever really explained church to me. You know, it was just this thing where we had to get up early on Sunday. We had to get dressed up. We had to go to this place. We had to sit still. We had to be quiet. And at the end of it, they gave you a piece of cardboard with nothing to wash it down.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you know, I didn't really ever understand it. And my parents were divorced when I was 10. I went through a lot of really rough years after that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we stopped going to church at that point.
Yeah.
And there was a whole lot of years that I spent sort of in darkness, involved in drugs and the music scene and all kinds of really dark things.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've gotten a little older, you know, I'm at that point where I'm losing friends now. You know, I'm 50 years old and I've got several friends have had cancer, alcoholism, motorcycle accidents, COPD. One friend died of a oh, I forget what it's called. Her vessel that went to her heart separated.
Yes. You know? Yeah. Yep.
And, you know, so for me, I really want to believe in God. I've sort of found my way back to God. One of the jobs that I had was installing sound systems in all kinds of different things. I've done stadiums and over 200 movie theaters and schools. And I spent 2 years on the road doing nothing but churches. I saw my apartment 26 days out of 2 years. And in all that time, I've been in every sort of church system there is. And I found sort of a universal truth amongst all religions. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically, don't be a dick, don't steal, don't, you know, cheat on your wife, whatever kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Despite whatever all of the other crap that it is that goes along with it, there's a common set of core.
Yes.
Common core at the set of it.
I think that people are, by and large, good. And I don't think
more of
that
a human construct.
It's a human construct, right? Ethics, and I mean, as social animals, and as we've made it this far in society, we haven't extincted ourselves or wiped each other out yet. I think in order to get this far and be as big and populous, dense as we are in cities and stuff like that, we've had to change and evolve and had. I mean, I hate to say that it's like it's good without altruism. It's good for the species and for culture and all that. I think that these things have been out of necessity, regard with or without religion. Mm. I feel like it's easy to go, well, don't steal and don't cheat on your wife. Don't. I think none of that is exclusive to religion.
Right.
Is it why? Why do you feel like the return to God or finding God or finding religion or having faith, the strength to find faith, as you're saying, why does God have to be a part of that?
Well, and I guess to explain that, I have to sort of explain to me what I feel God is.
Sure, okay. Yeah.
Because we get so hung up in this church or that church or what their beliefs are. To me, I simply look at it from a much bigger standpoint. I mean, the universe is so massively large, the human mind can't actually comprehend its size.
True.
For us to think that we're the only beings in that space is pretty egotistical of us.
It's statistically unlikely as well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as an engineer, I know what it takes to build something, you know? And so I look around every day at, I mean, just the human body, for example. It's a machine. It's an extremely well-built machine. And somebody, to me, had to have designed that.
Sure.
I just don't believe that it happened by happenstance.
There's I see. Too so many beyond just being like a theist, you're actually more of a creationist in a sense.
Maybe.
Okay.
But
okay.
To me, there's something that there's someone or something or some energy or whatever you want to call it has created everything that we know of and is part of everything we know. And so to me, that's what I call God.
So how do you feel about evolution?
Well, I don't think we know the answer to that. I think that there is a lot of things about this planet, this world, our lives, that we will never truly know the answer to.
Okay.
So, I would love to know the answers, but I don't think that we will.
And I'm not a biologist, and I'm not, you know, professionally educated in evolution, so there's a lot that I take on authority of folks that I do know are educated in these realms, or of what I've read and had, you know, layman's termed out for me to in a way that I can understand. I don't see any part of evolution as like, now wait a minute here, what about this part? Like when I have evolution explained out to me and when I understand that terminology like the fittest isn't best or strongest, it's most fit for the environment. Mm-hmm. You know, when you understand like the actual terminology and the effects behind evolution, the driving force for it, none of that to me sounds like anything I need to like guess at or wonder about or anything like that, because it seems like we can kind of prove that all this happens in a petri dish with bacteria resistance and things like that. We can see viruses evolve very quick, like influenza is a very fast mutating virus, and we can see it become advanced. What is the part of all of that where you're like, maybe there's something, maybe something magical has to happen here. Mm-hmm. Where is the part, you know, I mean, without being a scientist either, maybe it's not super specific for you, but what is your, what would you say?
Well, again, I don't have the answer to it, so I don't really know.
Okay.
It's possible, definitely plausible, but what started all of it? Even the chemicals and the all of the makeup of it, how did that get there for me? That's the bigger picture that we can't answer.
The initial spark.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah, and I get that. That first cause argument, which is a challenging one. It's what got it all to start, and there are a lot of questions there. I'm going to challenge you a little because you talk about how in the world today, standing up and saying you have faith is brave. And I look at the country we live in, and I look at the fact that we are overwhelmingly Christian. I look at the fact that
70%.
Yeah, 70. We're 70% Christian. I look at the fact that as an atheist, I represent less than 5% of the population. Mm-hmm. I look at the fact that I went into the bookstore the other day, and I looked at the atheist section of books. Which I mean, I don't read atheist books that much because they're boring. But except for yours, Greta, they're great. Anyway, the more than half of the books in the atheism section are Christian apologetics telling atheists why we're wrong. And then there are stacks, shelves and shelves of books about Christianity. There is literally one stack in Half Price Books that's just Bibles. And to me, I have to say, I feel like the country in which we live is exceptionally friendly to faith.
Yeah. It's easy to be a part of the majority.
Yeah.
It's easy to be a part of, it's easier when you are well represented, whether that's in media, movies, TV, or in the government. I feel like it's you know, next to impossible for an out atheist to get elected. It's next to impossible for someone to get elected if they're not a Christian in a lot of places.
I guess my question is, where do you see the challenge in being a person of Christian faith in this country?
In public. Okay. So, you know, the company I used to work for, I'm sure there's plenty of people there that were believers. But when they're in public, amongst their peers, amongst their coworkers, they don't bring it to the front. They're embarrassed about it. They don't want to, you know, let anybody else know. One guy that I work with, you know, he prays before every meal, but he doesn't want anybody to know he's doing it. So he, you know, is very quiet about it and tries to sort of hide it from everybody. And to me, I'm like, why are you embarrassed if you have this faith? You know, why not just say, yeah, I'm going to pray before my meal and stand up and be fearless about it, you know? I mean, but so many people seem to hide that fact. And even if they're regular churchgoers, they're not necessarily so open about it, you know?
Interesting. Do you think that could have anything?
Do you feel that it's there's a hostility there that people would be hostile to that kind of behavior in the workplace?
To some degree, yes.
In the workplace, yes.
Yeah.
It's the workplace. And to be honest, like, no one should have to be subjected to someone else's religion in the workplace. So, like, to me, I'm like, okay, that's not really public so much as I'm willing to bet that guy prays at the Olive Garden, you know, like, and probably doesn't feel too embarrassed about it when he's not around people he works with. But I think it's interesting because I wonder if there's definitely a shift. We've seen a shift sociologically in America where, for lack of a better word, it is becoming more acceptable to not believe. Mm-hmm. Whereas before it was, I mean, even when we started this podcast, that was not the case.
Yeah.
Like, it was not even...
Just in 5 years.
Yeah, just in the last 5 years, it's become something that's more accepted. And I wonder if it's that's making... some of these people to whom you're speaking feel, or maybe that's they feel like they're internalizing the popularity of another way of thinking as hostility toward their own.
Could be. I mean, it just feels like in the world today, with everything you see on the news and everything that's happening, you know, to be able to have faith and stand up and say you have faith just seems to be becoming a negative sort of thing.
I will say that when I first heard your topic of, you know, it takes strength to have faith, I think I agreed with it in the sense of, but not in a religious sense, but in a Yeah, so like I know I and a lot of other people are having a hard time keeping faith in humanity right now, and having faith in America and the concept of America, in capitalism, and something that I never questioned before. I was not some, I've never been like, yeah, fuck capitalism and burn it to the ground, and if we didn't have money, everything would be better. I've been strongly pro-capitalism, but lately things like, you know, like the way the Wall Street situation, the housing market, you know, problem after problem,
income inequity, just as a,
people who are, you know, let's not make it about any one issue, but like politician who's super against the color red suddenly discovered to be painting himself with red paint naked in bedroom, right? Like things like that, where it's like, Jesus, does anyone actually like? So I think that it does take strength to have faith in the sense that it is the idea that you are believing in something with no evidence, and you are are hoping. It's a lot of hope. I think that the more specific parts of what you're saying, that in it's hard in America to be of a Christian faith, and that takes strength. I mean, obviously the faith part, I think, does take some strength of character, and whether or not that character and I have a meshing thought process or ethos is, you know, that doesn't matter, but yeah, there is definitely something there.
I think you worded that better than I could have. So I'm very nervous.
Don't be. It's casual conversation.
We're literally nobody. Yeah.
To piggyback off what Molly is saying, I feel like saying that it's difficult to be a Christian in America is directly speaking to a group that has a lot of privilege in this country.
Or Christian, and it's, or Jewish, or Muslim, Buddhist, or whatever.
But those
flying spaghetti monster.
But it's vastly different because of the there's an entrenched
majority
power structure in being a majority, and the history and influence of Christianity in America. Yeah. Anyone who says to me, it's hard to be a Christian in America, I'm going to have an immediate problem with their argument. Because that's, I'm not going to go up to someone who's not white and say, boy, you don't know the struggles I've had being white in Minnesota. That's insensitive to start.
Yeah.
Incorrect. I would say objectively, none of the hardship I've faced in my life has been because I'm white. In fact, it may be in spite of being white. I don't think there are very many people in America who can legitimately say being Christian was a form of hardship for them.
Yep.
Now, that's not to say that they didn't have a difficult time, haven't faced struggles, haven't had, you know, bad things happen to them. That's not the argument I'm making. But I don't think that it's, I don't think it takes strength to be a Christian.
Okay.
Like Molly's saying, I can agree that having faith in something despite
And exactly what she said, to have strength in anything, no matter what that thing is, to be able to say, I believe in X, whatever that X is.
Regardless of evidence or regardless of people's opinions, this is just
exactly
what I believe.
Yep.
Sure, that does take some strength.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's, having been an out atheist now for, you know, a little over 5 years,
almost six.
The thing is that it takes strength, in a sense. I think it takes more strength, in my opinion, to be out about being an atheist in our society than it does to be. I mean, honestly, to pray at your table at work. And I think the other thing, and the thing that I was thinking about even more than that, is I wonder how much of this is regional. If you go to the Deep South, you said your friend's like from North Carolina.
Right, well, I spent 12 years in Dallas. So.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So if you go to the Deep South where religion is much more part of everyday life, I got to wonder how many people are embarrassed about praying over this.
I understand that if you refer to Texas as a part of the South, Texas will be very quick to point out that they are not a part of the South. Texas is Texas.
Yep. No, Texas is just Texas. I understand.
I think that the majority is a good way to frame this here, because I do think it takes strength to be those Muslim shoppers in Eden Prairie. To get down on your prayer rug in the middle of, and knowing that you're hearing, I would sit and be eating my meal listening to teenage girls giggling, saying terrorist, shit like that as they walked by. What's he doing? Or even worse, the people who are like, sir, do you need help? Sir, Do you need help, sir? Because they don't understand what's happening. They think someone
totally
just fell down.
Meaning.
They think someone just fell down. Yeah. So it does take some strength to not be like, shut up, Betty, I'm trying to pray to Mecca, you know, like, and instead just ignore them and like,
oh, damn it.
But like, I think
that's the name of the episode.
I think you're exactly right. Also, Tim, to not have faith and say that you're an atheist takes a certain amount of strength also. And in a way that is a sort of faith in and of itself, I think.
So is it
to have faith in people, maybe?
So would it be accurate in saying then that convictions take strength?
Yeah,
exactly. Regardless of what your beliefs
your
are,
principles.
Having convictions and having principles and sticking to them, regardless of what they may be, is takes strength and is an uphill battle and there's adversity there.
Yeah. I didn't eat bread for 2 years. It was really hard, I'll tell you. There are some personal convictions that take fucking strength.
Right.
and I no longer have that strength, which is why when I walk by a bakery, I'm like, yeah. But before it was like a very much, well, here's an interesting thing though. So the reason I was, a big part of the reason I was able to do that, right? To be like, as good as that bread smells, I'm not going to have any, was because I felt like I was on a better path. I had a better purpose. I had reasons, right? Like I had a, not a holier than thou, but maybe more of a like, oh, I'm better than bread, right?
Better
like,
than you. An improved version of yourself.
Yeah, me right now is better than that.
Bread,
I can't
does
do
not
that.
Own me.
Right. So maybe what we're really kind of dancing around and focusing in on here is that this concept of a strength of conviction requires you to say, this me and what I do is better than this thing that is tempting.
Yeah.
And so that is, I mean, which really is both the root of and the root problem of a lot of religion, that like my stuff's better, my church is better. You know, like you said, I guarantee that the two of those churches you put in sound systems for hate each other and are in direct competition and think that the other doesn't say the right words.
Yeah. I've got it right, they've got it wrong. One of us is going to heaven, one of us going to hell. They both believe the same thing.
And that's part of the problem that I have with religion, whatever particular religion is, because every religion has that sort of thing. This is right, that's wrong, you're wrong if you don't believe what we do.
That's why I left paganism eventually.
So Robert Wilkinson from the band Flaming O said something that I thought was really interesting. So I wrote it down because I wanted to be able to get this right. So
you've got pages of notes.
I did. Because I'm so nervous, I knew I was going to forget everything.
No, it's fantastic.
So, he said on a Facebook post, he says, I believe in a higher power. It's ambiguous to me. It can be a number of things. Music, people, nature. But I can also roll with God. My God is loving, compassionate, forgiving, tolerant, patient. He or she welcomes all into his heart and loves all people, all cultures, and all living things.
Hmm.
And I really like that. I really want to...
That's a great God to believe in.
You sound a lot like... we had Ricky Robinson on the show. And it's similar... It's a very similar... If you haven't listened to that episode yet, it's a very similar ethos in the sense of, like, I believe in a... I believe that there's more. I believe something had to make all this beauty, but I also, at the same time, don't want to put labels on it. Like, like a brand new Facebook girlfriend. You don't want to scare her away.
I mean, I don't think any of us can answer what is God. Mm-hmm. I think there's just the fact that you have faith that a God exists, whatever label you attach to that God, I think is important, at least to me. So each person has to do their own thing,
absolutely,
live their own lives,
absolutely.
And I'm not here to convince anybody.
You stand alone before that giant set of scales when they weigh your heart against the feather. No one else is there with you.
Nobody else is there. It's just you and the feather.
Yep, just you staring into the eyes of the death god after crossing the river, and beyond that, I mean, you know, we all have to answer for our own feather hearts.
It's I found sometimes that having like a conversation or like spirited debate even with someone who's not really adhering to any one religion and has like a
pantheon almost.
Or like a spiritual outline. Like it sounds like you don't have like a religion necessarily. You don't belong to something that's right. But you have a spiritual outline of what you
like an ethos, a spiritual ethos.
Hope
exists,
and also kind of support that hope with belief that you're trying hard to maintain.
Yep.
I think that when we're having conversations with folks like that, it's really difficult to make absolutes or to be like, compared to like if you're arguing with someone that has dogma, mm-hmm. you can be like, they can be like, well, my religious book says it was made this way at this right. time. These
and
things
like,
happened.
Your religious yep. book says that bread turns into flesh and blood, yeah. and it doesn't. Yeah. I ate
or,
it. And it
or like
I
your,
have a problem with that.
Your,
yeah,
your
yeah,
religious
yeah.
book contradicts itself in these ways and these things here. Or right. if we look at the historical writings that these books are based on, we can tell that they're written in these right. ways by these people. When you're talking with someone like you or Ricky, when we had him on, it's like, it's hard to be like, well, what do you believe in about this? And your response is like, I like these things yep. and I want those things to exist. Yep. It's hard to be like, well,
gotcha question.
Right, yeah. Your general feelings of goodwill are adequate. I don't really have anything
screw
against
you
that.
You wanting those things to be true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It all goes
back to the telephone principle to me. You know, you played that game in school. You line up mm-hmm. 10 people in a row. You tell the first person, I went to the bag. I bought a bag of oranges. Mm-hmm. By the time it gets to the end of that, it's completely wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
We play that game a lot.
And we know, and I'm terrible at history that, you know, but... during certain periods of time, whole pages of the Bible were ripped out, erased, rewritten
yeah.
to hide
sure.
that sort yep. of thing. And even just the other day, I read something online that said 14 books of the Bible were hidden.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
At one
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
They probably lost in Alexandria, to be honest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what is real? I mean, what of that is real?
Mm-hmm.
You know. So I mean, I can't ascribe to any one particular religion because to me, none of them are necessarily right. Instead, I'd rather believe in the overall concept.
Do you feel like you could start your own cult religion?
No,
like,
nor would I want to.
Because you wouldn't want to push it on other people.
Exactly.
That would mean you had the answers.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And for me,
yeah.
this is me. So.
Yeah, fair. I love it.
Hmm. All right, well, this has been super fascinating.
Really good.
And thank you for bringing the topic. We have to move on to five questions.
Five questions!
So now here's the deal. We've got five new questions, but you brought five questions of your
yep,
own.
That's correct.
And I'm looking at the time and I'm going, we got time to do one or the other. You won this in the silent auction.
You
so do you want our questions or do you want your questions?
How about a little combination of both? Because some of mine are good, some of mine aren't.
We'll go back
right.
and forth.
Go back and
Let's
forth.
Let's go back and forth
okay.
until we get to five.
Okay. All right.
So,
all right. Fair enough.
So the first one
yeah.
I'm going to have. All right. So this one I thought long and hard about. So as comedians, and you guys, do you all of you do vilification tennis?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So you don't seem to be the kind of person, the kind of people that get offended by much.
True.
So what is the most offensive thing somebody could say to you on a personal level?
Oh, that's really good.
Oh, boy.
Something about you or something that you would be really offended about.
Really offended about. Okay.
It would have to be something that's I'm more likely to get offended by a statement like, well, it takes more faith to be an atheist than it does to be a Christian.
Mm.
Because it suggests to me or atheism is just another religion. That one actually I think is probably the one that I'd pick because it suggests a complete misunderstanding of what atheism is and a complete misunderstanding of what religion is. And so it offends me in the context that the person who's saying it doesn't know what the fuck they're talking about. And that mm-hmm. that offends me. You know, as far as a topic to make a joke about, the topic that I personally find distasteful tends to be rape jokes. Because
we did find
I think
that you had a line about us making pedophile jokes
there,
about your kids specifically.
Pedophile jokes about my children really did not
specifically
sit well
about like having sex with his children
yeah,
and
then
not about
it was
like
then
yeah.
it went too far. But
yeah.
it wasn't even I don't know if I was offended or just as a parent kind of
it was what you said was, wow, I didn't know I had a line, but here we are.
Here's the line.
I don't like that. You please don't do it.
And again, I've heard rape jokes that I think are really funny, but I think they're really risky and they're dangerous and they scare
like
me.
Rape.
Well, and there's a difference between a joke about rape and a joke at a rape victim's expense,
yes.
too. I mean, that's,
so,
yeah.
But anyway, my answer really is it takes, really is atheism just another religion. That really does offend me.
For me, on a personal level, if I'm going to interpret that as meaning not someone saying something shitty about like my family or someone like
I mean
because,
about you
yeah
sure.
cause
about you.
Anytime people are anti-trans I get super like hackles up about
yeah.
that but I would say someone saying your bisexuality doesn't count because you're married to a man. That's something that would personally offend me. And as much as I get offended
uh-huh.
in that way, I would say that because that to me is like, so you're saying there's gay and straight, and it's based on who you're currently fucking, and that's it. That's what you're saying when you say that. So that I feel like that to me would be something that would offend me.
This one's tricky for me because answer is something that I've had to deal with and kind of get over, and I'm not there yet. Yeah. But mine is, and it's hard to object or raise the concerns or my objections in a way that doesn't sound like tone policing. So I'm very, very sensitive about this, and that's getting lumped in with white people as a problem in culture, or the vilification of white folks as a whole, as a part of people contributing to and benefiting from systemic racism, mm-hmm. is something that I'm very sensitive about, and I try not to let it bother me when people say things like white people are the fucking devil, because on one hand I'm like, no, though historically white people are the fucking devil,
and also we've sort of right now
and sort of also right now,
sure.
and I look at who's in charge of our country at the moment and all that, and it's like I can only see
white people
systemic white problems.
Yeah.
Being caused by white people.
But at the same time, you're a white person. You're like, I'm not the problem.
And right. All the white people you know aren't the problem.
Right.
And
so,
yeah.
So
right.
when someone says to me, you know, like, fuck white people, when I'm trying to be, like, the best white people I can be, the best people I can be, regardless of the whiteness, mm-hmm. that's really tough.
Yeah.
That's really tough. And sometimes I have to be like, you know what? This isn't about me. I don't have to voice my opinion here. I don't have to be involved in this conversation. I don't need to defend myself. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the best thing to do in those situations is just, like, know that I'm trying not to be one of the bad ones, and then just, like, walk with my anger or upset, you know, my offendedness.
I like it.
For me, it's more an expression that I've seen women make when they find out I'm interested in them. It's sort of this expression of shock and disgust
at
the same time. It's like, oh.
I have seen that on both women and men's faces myself in relation to me. When I was in college, I told this girl that I, like, wanted to be her girlfriend, I take her out on a date, and she just went, oh.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Yeah.
Is that what this whole thing has been about? And I'm like, this whole friendship? No.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to ask a question.
Yeah,
we're
going to
go with question number three, which is, what is a book or movie that changed your life?
All right, so for me, it's a book by M. Scott Peck called People of the Lie, The Hope for Healing Human Evil.
Hmm.
And it's a really interesting book that really taught me to look at my own actions in a totally different way and how I treat people and things around me. So
cool.
Nice.
I like that.
I haven't heard of that book, but I'm going to look it up.
I know. That's a good one.
I almost brought you a copy, but I wasn't sure if anybody would ask.
So now it's your turn to ask a question.
Okay. So, all right. So people that have addictions that use substances, whatever their choice, their substance of choice is, mm-hmm. they're doing it to change the way they feel. They say, I drink to relax, I drink mm-hmm. to have fun, or whatever, these sorts of things. Do you think that acting can also be an addiction?
Yes.
And by that, you're on stage, you're being somebody else, you're sort of escaping the world.
Yes, it's absolutely. Not only that, but there is literally a chemical rush that comes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can get addicted to the performance high. We've come off stage before and been, all three of us, we've been shaking, and not because we were nervous or it went badly, just because we were so fucking amped up from the flood of the natural
drug. I feel like I could stay up all night, and then 45 minutes later you crash.
I mean, again, I suppose it depends on your definition of addiction, I guess, but I think you could get addicted to it. I mean, and I think those of us that do a lot of performing, I mean, you get super excited. You're super, it's like, I can't wait. You know, I love doing PowerPoint karaoke. Yeah. The thing I hate about it is the waiting until it's my turn.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like, I just fucking want to do it right now.
I would say for sure, like at getting on the stage for certain shows, when a show is great, much like with drugs, right?
Uh-huh.
So when the drugs are, and I was a drug addict myself on different things. So like when let's just say cocaine, when the cocaine's great and you got the great cocaine and everything's great and you're like, oh my God, that's so good. I just need to do more cocaine. And then, but also when the coke is bad and it's awful and you did not have a good time and you feel miserable and maybe like you wrote a 3-page treatise in the middle of the night about how terrible you hate life. But but like you still want to do coke. So I feel like that's how it is. That's why I would say it is kind of like an addiction.
It is, because
you never get out there and have a bad show.
You have a bad night on a stage and you're like, I'm never doing this again.
Whereas with drinking, you're like,
I'm going to do this again and get it fucking right.
Absolutely.
There's a Bo Burnham stand-up.
Former.
He's got a song, Art Is Dead, and there's this lyric in it that's, my drug's attention and I am an addict, but I get paid to indulge in my habit. It's all an illusion. I'm wearing makeup.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like,
my drug's attention.
I kind of get that a little bit. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to ask you a question.
Yep. Which one?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay. Which conspiracy theory do you find most interesting?
Okay, so I'm going to answer this two ways, because you said interesting and compelling, but so interesting is aliens.
Yeah.
Do they exist? And the other thing is, would we really want contact with them?
Right.
For example, look at how we treat bugs. We have no problem exterminating them, stepping on them, squishing them. And for aliens to be able to come here from wherever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have to be far more intelligent than we are, and they may just look at us exactly like bugs.
Yeah, you know? I don't want to be some cow for Omicron Persei 8. Yeah. Like, that doesn't sound good, but that's what would happen.
Right.
And then what's the other way you said?
So the other thing. Oh, so the one that I think is actually the most interesting is, I was in New York on 9/11. My hotel was a block away. I was 8 blocks away that morning. I have pictures of the tower taken within 15 minutes of the first strike. We drove past it within 10.
Jesus,
we could do a whole show on just that.
Yeah.
But to me, the conspiracy theories that they claim around that are very interesting, because I know what I went through there and all of the things that happened. And there's too many things that are even... I don't believe, and I lived through it. So, I mean...
The truth or stuff with that is so crazy to me, because it's like... It's not. I could see if it was this, like, we need to understand this and we're trying to make it someone's fault. But like the people who do it tend to either they say like the whole thing was the government, or they're the same kind of people that say Sandy Hook didn't happen and shit like that. You're like, no,
Where do you think TV news is filmed?
Like,
Right.
That is really compelling. I can only imagine if I'd lived about through it.
So, fifth question. You are the guest. Yes. You decide. Okay. Your question or ours?
I have.
All right. Okay. So
all of you are married. I am not. Okay. So if you could go back in time to just maybe a couple of weeks before you got married, what advice would you give yourself about being married, knowing what you know now?
Ooh. I know mine. All right. Mine would be compromise is not sacrifice. And that giving up, like, I had to give up a lot of money. I didn't have to. It became necessary for me to give up some of my harder partying ways, because I was no longer living that life. I wasn't that girl. And it wasn't because, like, Nick was like, you have to stop doing it or anything like that. It was just more like, this is a new chapter.
Yep.
And so what felt like at the time, my younger self being like, this is bullshit, and you're sacrificing things you love for a man. It was more like, no, this is compromise to join your life with another human being. And that means maybe you like can't stay out all the time, or like you have to like recognize that like some of your friends are assholes and aren't good for you, and maybe we shouldn't hang out anymore. But like, so,
I live that life.
But yeah, like the idea, I think it's just that concept of like, at first you balk. At first it feels like you're giving up yourself in a way, and it's not. It's an important thing to have happen.
It's kind of twofold. Listen more, talk less. I think is a really good piece of advice. And the majority of the arguments that I've had with my wife probably didn't need to be had if I had listened more and talked less. But also, you need to be honest when there are problems, and you have to be honest and not accusing, but just say, we need to talk about this and figure it out. But when you say that, then you need to listen to what your partner's saying, because a lot of the time when you're having a frustration, they're having the same frustration, but you haven't taken the time to just sit down and go, How do we solve this?
I think it's especially true when you have kids too. We have a lot more time and with each other, and are able to get our feel from each other, because we don't have a triangulation of taking care of kids to distance us.
We have other people between us. I think I would it's kind of similar to what Molly was saying. I think I worded it totally different, so it didn't sound the same until you talked about it more. And then I was like, oh, yeah. I've got this, like, theory about our marriage, at least. And that's that there are parts of my brain that, like, do things really well, mm-hmm. that do things better than her brain. And there's parts that, of her brain that she does things, like, way better than... Like, she has skills that I don't like budgeting skills and social calendar skills and stuff like that. And there's stuff that I do better. And, over time, being married, the parts of my brain that do the things that she's better at have kind of, like, atrophied with time because she's taken over those roles. And then, like, maybe vice versa. There's stuff that I do that I think about that, like, she can rely on me to think about and do, mm-hmm. that when we're together, there's this synergistic effect where we're, like, she can ignore those things and I pay attention to those things and, you know, vice versa. So... together, we're way more efficient than two people.
Yep.
Apart, though, also, if you try to, like, hey, Nick, you want to go get dinner next week? Calendar.
Let me check with the wife, yeah.
Right.
Let me see what we're doing.
As I was realizing some of those things were happening, I was, like, panicky and, like, almost maybe, like, maybe I should reclaim some more of this control back and fight against this, like, mm-hmm. Letting this happen. Old Nick, you should have embraced that and just like gone into it because, if you ride that wave, you get a lot more stuff done and you get to rely on your strengths.
Together. I have one other small note that I think we can all three of us at this table agree with and Pat too, that, once you get married, your health is no longer just your own. You don't get to keep health secrets. You don't get to be like, well, I don't care if I take my mental medication and it's my choice. It's like, but you joined your life with mine. So like, you know, you don't get to just say, I don't care if I die of a heart attack at 45. Like, yeah, I do. And I think that's, you know, Tim's had, you know, Tim and Pat both, they've been married a lot longer. You guys have been through some pretty big health stuff together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been like a lot of mental health stuff on our end. And that was a big thing I learned was like, you don't just get to say, it doesn't matter because you have another person that you really are two halves of a whole.
You're legally incorporated now.
Yes. You have to tell your business partner.
You have a life life business partner.
If you were in business with someone, 50-50 partners, if you were diagnosed with cancer and you're going to have to spend a lot of time away from work, you'd have to tell your partner. And if you didn't, you could be held financially liable by them, you know?
I own a number of businesses, and I have a business partner in one, and it's very much like that, where I keep going, God, I don't want to tell my business partner this, but
you
I have.
Gotta, yep.
It's responsible. It's yep.
So then you're all set. You got it. You know what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Women like to be treated like a business. That's what I
mean. Yeah, sure, right, yeah.
Those were really good questions.
They were great questions.
So, Dave, once again, thank you for the contribution.
Thank you very much for being on here.
That was a really, really interesting topic, and I... What?
Oh, Dave, you have a website or anything we can send people to or promote?
Sorry, I don't. I actually need a web person. If there's somebody in a web person, you can contact me through Facebook or the VicWorks@gmail.com. Contact me through there. We are opening a motorcycle specialty shop based on Victory Motorcycles. We're just about open, and we desperately need a website.
So that's what I want to plug.
We are the Geeks Without Job posting.
Geeks Without Jobs.
Sorry.
Geeks Without Jobs.
No apology necessary. Once again, thank you for the contribution. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to remind folks about Patreon because we have reached our $50 goal. We're still looking for that $100 goal, which will allow us to get new equipment. But the $50 goal that we are at now means we're doing special episodes two a year just for Patreon supporters. So
and we got it scheduled. We're going to see ghosts.
Yeah. We're
going
to go see ghosts.
Ghost.
And before we go, Tim, I heard you really liked my Lego walk challenge. I suggested that after that.
Is that you? That was the worst. That was the worst. I'll talk about
it. It made for some great pictures.
Yeah.
It really did.
It really hurts a lot.
Yeah, I bet.
The Legos stick to your feet. So you get to the end of the walk and you try and step onto the floor and you're still stepping on Legos.
We use pine cat litter. It's a similar concept.
Well, that was just there was too many Legos in the pan, though. If there was fewer Legos, it would have hurt more.
No.
You are less surface area, more pounds per
square
inch.
Pretty sure I saw Keith talking about trying to find a treadmill that could be donated next year.
Lego treadmill?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's not going to happen.
That's monstrous.
Anyway, that's it. Please, we could use some more reviews on iTunes. Haven't had any reviews for a while. We know there are a lot of you out there. Some of you must be downloading us from iTunes, so please say how awesome we are. Or that you hate us. It's okay.
Either one. We just want to support you.
We can totally take
Your father and I are just glad that you're home.
All right. We'll be here. We'll be here next Tuesday. Bye.
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 My belt has a lot of strength for holding up my pants.
You know what else takes a lot of strength to hold? My dick.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Tell us what you've got that might work, and we will tell you yes.